From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Happy Tuesday, beautiful people. Yeah, welcome to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Have you heard? Kevin Durant is now the league's MVP. Yes, he was just named MVP a little over an hour ago, folks, beating out LeBron James. Kevin Durant, he got 119 first-place votes. Miami's LeBron James, who, of course, is the reigning MVP, has won the last two MVP awards, to be exact, and four of the previous five. He finished a distant second with six first-place votes. So, KD definitely winning that one single-handedly. You know, it's pretty amazing because I was driving to work today. Like I do every single day, you know, sports radio always on. And, when this story broke, there were a few callers out there. There's still a lot of LeBron haters out there. You know, there's so many LeBron haters out there who just don't like LeBron just due to, they always go back to that whole decision fiasco. Was it 3 years ago now where, of course, LeBron James, you know, he had the whole, you know, press conference about where he would go. Would he stay in Cleveland? Or would he take his talents elsewhere? Of course, we all know how the story went. He decided to take his talents out in Miami to team up with Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade, and they threw the entire concert, the celebration saying, you know, we win not one, not two, not three, and so on and so forth, referring to championships, that is. And, you know, he garnered a lot of dislike and a lot of anti-LeBron haters out there, including myself. I will be the first to admit, I mean, LeBron James was not my favorite athlete in the world during that time. But it just blows my mind. You know, it's been 3 years now. And you think that, you know, we kind of, even though we mention it, and even LeBron admits it now, that whole decision thing, the whole decision broadcast, was certainly, it wasn't needed. And, he regrets it in many ways. And, you know, people still bring it up, though. It just baffles me how many people still garner that just dislike for LeBron James due to that one single moment. And there were many people rejoicing that called in on this particular show due to the fact that, you know, KD won an MVP and didn't have to go elsewhere to team up with somebody to do it. And, even though he does have Russell Westbrook on his squad, who is an unbelievable player. Now, Durant did play much of the season without the all-star Westbrook. And, a great season for Durant, definitely deserving of it. The man averaged 32 points per game. The Thunder finished with a 59-23 record, second best record in the league. He also did his thing on the boards, averaging 7.4 rebounds per game. I mean, he was unbelievable. 5 assists per game. Shot over 50%. I mean, he was unbelievable through many stretches throughout this season, and deservingly so. So congrats to KD. And, we'll kind of talk about, you know, does KD deserve this award? I certainly do. I would love to get your opinion on it. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. As always, we will take your calls throughout this entire hour. And, again, we have a great show in store for you all. As we'll be, this is a subject we've never talked about here on Current Sports, and that being the wonderful sport of rowing. Yes, we're going to dive into, we've never talked about rowing on here. I love talking about sports that, you know, aren't too familiar with a lot of our listeners, and including myself. And later on today, around the 1:15 mark on today's show, we'll be talking with a man who knows a thing or two about the sport. He is the head coach for the MSU women's rowing program. Spent 7 years and as an assistant, has one unbelievable track record of success. Matt Weiss, he will be joining me to talk about the season that has just concluded for the MSU women's rowing team. And as they look toward now to the Big Ten championships, he'll kind of recap the season and explain a little bit about the sport, because if you're like me, I don't know much about the sport, familiar with it to a degree. But Matt's going to break all of that down and kind of talk about how the popularity of rowing is kind of increasing over time. So you don't want to miss that. It should be an interesting interview, to say the least. And we'll also talk, the NFL draft is this week. Actually, now, 2 days away? There's so much buzz around the NFL draft that's been happening over the past month or two, even three, ever since the NFL season has ended, I should say. And, you know, there's a lot of question marks out there. Who's, you know, is there going to be a team that risk, you know, taking Johnny Football? Where would Jadeveon Clowney go? How many quarterbacks will be taken? I mean, it's a lot of, you know, questions out there in this year's NFL draft. I'm certain many of you Lions fans out there are concerned on what the Lions will do in this upcoming draft. Again, 2 days away. Exciting stuff. We'll list, like each and every Tuesday, the top five Tuesday today, the top five things to look for in this week's draft. So you don't want to miss that. And, you know, we'll talk a little NBA playoffs as well. So a stacked show for you. Again, we'll take your calls throughout this entire hour, like we do each and every Monday through Friday. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. And also Greg Iani, who is the Michigan State University Deputy Athletic Director. Greg Iani, he joins me tomorrow night on Current Sports TV. Greg is a great guy who is a very, very hardworking guy. You got to be when you work next to Mark Hollis, of course, the wonderful athletic director that he is. He's going to talk about just the renovations that are going on to multiple athletic venues around the campus of Michigan State University. And go and even beyond that, Greg is such an intelligent, really nice guy. I'll be sitting down with Greg tomorrow. If you want to get a chance to meet Greg and be a part of that live studio audience each and every Wednesday night, of course, you can do that by going to WKAR.org and signing up online for free. All right, without further ado, here are your current sports quick hit headliners on this May 6th, 2014. You know, I didn't mention yesterday, it was also Cinco de Mayo. Forgot all about Cinco de Mayo during the show yesterday. It wasn't until I got off the air, I was like, oh man, I should have mentioned that. So I hope everybody had a great Cinco de Mayo. All right, let's start off with some high school action here. Mason, how about this? The Mason girls soccer team, they clinched the outright CAAC gold title, scoring less than a minute in and rolling to an impressive 7-0 win over Eden Rapids on Monday night. Now, Whitney Lux, she scored two goals, and Hannah Dermerfall and Katie Spaulding and Kira Momberg, Brooke Benuel, Elaine Burleson, they all had each a goal for the Bulldogs, who are, again, 5-0 in the CAAC gold, clinching that title yesterday. They have a two-game lead on the rest of the gold with one league game remaining. So you got to love that. Mason is certainly a great team. Every year, actually, they hit the hit the grass. They are very, very impressive. So congrats to the Mason girls soccer team for clinching the CAAC gold title yesterday. It's certainly exciting for them. And the Big Ten, how about this? The Big Ten has scheduled a press conference right now, actually, at 1 p.m. today at the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C., with Commissioner Jim Delaney scheduled to speak. Though the conference didn't specify the details of the announcement, Pete Medhurst of 106.7 The Fan in D.C. reports that the Big Ten will move its basketball tournament to the Verizon Center in D.C. in the year 2017. So how about that? That's something to look forward to. Now, Maryland Director of Athletics Kevin Anderson confirmed it. Anderson said, quote, "We're excited the Big Ten men's basketball tourney will be played at the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C. The Big Ten has shared its commitment to having a strong presence on the East Coast. It's a great opportunity for our fans to attend the tourney in our backyard, and it should be a tremendous atmosphere." So, again, the Big Ten tournament moving now to Washington, D.C. Of course, that's not until 2017, though, but exciting stuff. Certainly, that's exciting to look forward to. All right, and Tom Izzo, folks, Michigan State men's basketball coach Tom Izzo will be part of a renowned group of USA basketball and college champion basketball coaches, which will visit the Pentagon, actually, for a strategy seminar with military officials and conduct a panel discussion on leadership for more than 400 service members tomorrow. So Tom Izzo, a part of that panel to talk to those military members. That should be great. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff's General Martin Dempsey, in collaboration with USA Basketball and the NBA and their NBA Cares Hoops for Troops program, will host coaches from the USA Basketball men's and women's national teams and NCAA collegiate teams. Now, the panel discussion will be televised on the Pentagon Channel and webcast, which can be found at www.pentagonchannel.mil/livestream.aspx. That starts at 1:30 p.m. tomorrow. That should be exciting stuff. Definitely interesting to see what Tom Izzo has to say. But I tell you, it just shows you the amounts of just national impact that Tom and the national just presence that Tom Izzo has. He's bigger than life, I tell you. So that should be great stuff there. And how about the Detroit Tigers, folks? Max Scherzer's 8 shutout innings propelled the Tigers to a 2-0 win over the Houston Astros. Last year's AL Cy Young winner, he struck out 9, walked 1, gave up just 3 hits in the outing, and Joe Nathan took care of the Astros in the 9th to preserve the win. Now, Rajay Davis's RBI single in the 7th opened the scoring, and Victor Martinez added an 8th inning homer to provide some insurance. Now, the Tigers and Astros are at it again tonight. First pitch is set for 7:08 p.m. But what an outing for Max Scherzer. He's certainly putting on quite a debut for other teams out there that possibly want to bid for his presence on their ball club next season. So Max is certainly impressive. And the Tigers are impressive right now, to say the least. My goodness. All right, how about this? You know, despite having just over 1 million followers, the Detroit Pistons' Facebook page ranks 2nd in the NBA in the Facebook Assessment Index. Now, that's according to the University of Extremadura. That's in Spain, actually. Now, while the number of followers is low, Detroit diehards exhibit a high level of engagement, which is determined by the number of shares, mentions, and likes per post. So that's about the only positive news that you can give about the Detroit Pistons. How about that? The 2nd most active page in the NBA, though. Huh, I wonder. That's interesting to me. All right, and how about this? More action from the NBA. 76ers point guard Michael Carter-Williams, he scored a rare victory in Philadelphia this season, capturing the Rookie of the Year award with 104 of 124 possible votes. Now, Carter-Williams became the 3rd player since the 1950-1951 season to lead rookies in scoring at 16.7 points per game, assist at 6.3 assists per game, and rebounds at 6.2. So great season for him. Orlando's Victor Oladipo finished 2nd in voting, with Utah point guard Trey Burke in 3rd. Of course, Trey Burke, a Michigan alum there. And Victor Oladipo, of course, was with Indiana a few years ago. So great outing, though. Michael Carter-Williams, he certainly had a great season with the 76ers. So congrats to him. And more NBA action. The Los Angeles Clippers last night, they laid a 122-105 beatdown on the Oklahoma City Thunder in Game 1. Chris Paul led the Clips, going 8 of 9 from 3-point land. 8 of 9, my folks. That's unbelievable. And 12 of 14 overall, shooting for 32 points in 3 quarters of work. That's called efficiency. Westbrook, Russell Westbrook, he rallied the Thunder with 29 points, 9 of 14 shooting. Game 2 is tomorrow, 9:30 p.m. in OKC. And the Washington Wizards, they improved to 4-0 on the road this postseason with a 102-96 win over the Indiana Pacers in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference semifinal. Bradley Beal scored a game-high 25 points. Trevor Ariza, he added 22 for the Wiz. For the Pacers, Paul George and George Hill each scored 18 points in defeat. Game 2 also tomorrow, 7 p.m. out in Indy. So there you have that. Exciting. I tell you what, we didn't get a chance to talk about the NBA's first round yesterday, but what a first round it was. And how about the Wizards, though? That's certainly been a surprise for me. I mean, the Wizards, you know, of course, knocking off the Chicago Bulls, now playing the Pacers. The Pacers are kind of a lackluster team right now, certainly not the team that they were to start the season, but I did not expect the Wizards to be this far. I actually chose the Bulls in the first round, but how about that? All right, and also, one last mention, Kevin Durant is the MVP of the NBA now, knocking out LeBron James. LeBron James finishing 2nd in those votes. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, you know the number, 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Like us there, and even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. All right. Well, in the meantime, while you all are typing away and calling in, getting those fingers ready, I love to bring on guests and highlight sports that, you know, don't get a lot of shine. And today's current sports, we're going to do just that. You know, this is an incredible coach, an incredible man leading this team. He is in his 9th season as the head coach for the MSU women's rowing program, spent 7 years as an assistant. He has previously led the team to its highest placing at the NCAA championship and back-to-back Big Ten titles back in 2008 and 2009. And you can't forget about an unprecedented 4th straight gold medals for the Varsity 8 at Big Ten Championships. It's my pleasure to welcome the head coach, again, for the MSU women's rowing team, Matt Weiss. Welcome to the show. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing very well, y'all. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for joining me today. Now, you know, Matt, again, you know, this is our first time ever that we've, you know, I love covering different sports and bringing on different guests that, you know, just dive into a different realm of athletics. And that being MSU rowing, the first time we've talked about rowing here on the show. Just for our listeners out there who aren't familiar with the sport, first of all, Matt, can you describe just, you know, just the grind of a season, how the season works, the scoring of the sport, and how the, you know, a team prepares for the postseason, which you all are doing right now?
Sure. I think probably the easiest way to describe it is in sports that people know. It's similar to track and swimming. In that track, you have, and maybe track, you have various events, which is exactly what we have with different boats. There's seven different boats in the Big Ten Championships. And the three top boats, they're your fastest boats, actually, those are the ones that will qualify for the NCAA Championships. And then the boats, they all go the same distance. So we all go a mile and a quarter, but they're different skill levels as far as the events go, and there's also different numbers of people. So the top two boats in your program actually have eight rowers and a coxswain. The coxswain is similar to a jockey, kind of runs a race plan and does all that. And then the third fastest boat in the program is actually a four-person boat. So it's got four rowers and a coxswain in it.
And they all race at the same time, or is it divided up? Because I know you talked about
it's divided up into each event. So each event will go out and race. So our top boat will race the top boats from the other programs, and then those points are skewed toward the top end. So your fastest boat scores more points than your second fastest, third fastest, and so on down.
And I'm pretty sure this is a pretty intricate question, but as far as the points, how do those points add up? I mean, how do you divide that up? How is that broken down points wise?
So in the top boat, every place is worth nine, and then it goes six for the second boat, four for the four, and then it goes, I think it's three. Now you're really pushing my three, two, one. There's a certain combination, but the top two boats. If you win the top two boats, if you have a hard time losing the Big Ten title. I mean, if you do well in those two events, the points are highly skewed to those first two boats.
Wow, that's pretty interesting stuff, Matt. Now, I got to ask you, you know, when you talk about the preparation for rowing, of course, the weather is one of the biggest factors. The weather has to be just right. And, of course, living here in Michigan, it's got to be tough to try and work around that. I mean, how does the preparation begin for a season? When does it start for you all? Because I know the weather has to be kind of a hindrance for you, especially this year.
The weather this year has been quite a challenge. We had to travel more in March than we ever have. We usually get out. We roll on the Grand River in Lansing, so there's a little bit of current there, which allowed us to get out fairly early. We're usually out the first or second week in March. Not real comfortable, but
right.
But it's thought, at least. And this year it wasn't. So we had to spend some time. Actually, we went down to Tennessee, and then we went to Columbus, and we tried to find open spots everywhere. And so it became a little bit of a challenge in March. But once April hit, you know, everything was good, and so it's been actually a fairly nice spring. The wind for us is actually the biggest issue. It's not so much temperature as the wind.
So you guys were going out of state just to find somewhere to practice, huh?
Yeah, practice and to compete. So it was challenging in March. Usually we don't have to do that.
You know, Matt, like you said, I mean, in March, that's when you guys really start to prepare and practice and get in the thick of things for you all. But, you know, in the off season, you know, those months like December and, you know, November, I mean, what is the preparation like there? Are they just in the weight room, or how does that work?
We have about 40 rowing machines here at Jennison Fieldhouse that we train indoors on, and they can't wait to get back out on the water, I'll tell you that. It becomes like running on a treadmill, you know, 6 days a week for hours at a time, and because it's a training sport similar to swimming, and they have to put a lot of miles on, so it becomes a pretty good grind through January and February.
And you know, Matt, I gotta ask, how many do you, because I looked on the roster you know, before prepping for today's show, and you have a pretty stacked roster. About how many are on that roster?
Typically we hold between 55 and 65 in the spring.
You know, go ahead, I'm sorry.
In fall time, we have a number of walk-ons, so we actually have about 80 to 85 in the fall time that we have kind of a long tryout process for.
Wow, 80? You said 80 walk-ons?
Yes.
How does that tryout process work?
Well, rowing is very similar to, I think the softball coach said, we're the we're the Navy SEALs of collegiate sports. And it's just a lot of work, right? So there's a lot of grind to it, and we try to find people on campus that were meant to be rowers and didn't know it. So we, you know, usually swimmers, basketball players, they just didn't know they had a lung capacity that was and so we worked them hard in the fall. They have their own events. The freshmen do, so that's helpful. They can compete against other freshmen, and we've had some success on campus. We've had three U.S. national team rowers, and all of them are walk-ons at MSU. So
wow, that is very, very impressive, Matt. And for you, you know, when you're going through these tryouts and evaluating the these different athletes who want to walk on the team, I mean, what do you look for to make sure they're the right fit for the team and you know can really produce as a part of the team?
Well, most rowers are very tall. They're between 5'10 and 6'2 probably typically for our team. They're long. So if you think of a leverage standpoint, that's what rowing is. So the long, lean levers is what we're looking for. People that can also have some kind of power output with that. So because it's a power endurance. It's like lifting something off the ground. So basically a quick analogy, lift a 50-pound bar off the ground 250 times in 6 minutes. That's someone that wants to do that, and someone that is able to do that, those can end up be pretty good rowers.
Oh my goodness, that's unbelievable stuff, ladies and gents. If you're just now joining us here on Today's Current Sports, we are talking with the head coach for the MSU women's rowing program, Matt Weiss. Now, Matt, you all finished the regular season, not too long ago, with strong results against two top 10 teams in of course Michigan and Ohio State. Now, they were both identical scores, 45-27. How would you measure the success of your team now heading into the Big Ten championships?
Well, I think we're set up fairly well. It's a very young team, and they're learning how to race, and they've gotten better every weekend. And the race this past weekend against Ohio State, we were actually in front of the Buckeyes in the top two events that they talked about. They were in front through a little bit more than the halfway point of the race, and they've just got to learn that they can – sustain that speed, and that's what we're using this next 2 weeks for. We're spending a lot of time. It's almost like rowing camp this week because school ended, so we can spend a lot of time in the boats, and the young group can really learn how fast they are. So they showed some really good speed this weekend, and then they showed their youth, because the second race against Michigan, I think we could have been much closer, possibly beat them, and they succumbed to nerves a little bit. So the water got a little rougher there, and they didn't handle those conditions very well. So we had kind of a mixed bag to finish up the regular season.
And, you know, Matt, speaking of Michigan, you had a pretty interesting quote I want to bring up really quick, that I read about. You said, quote, "I think that against Michigan, we probably were worrying more about getting a result instead of sticking to the process. We raced so well in the morning, and I think that we came out in the afternoon wanting to prove ourselves, and that backfired on us a little bit," end quote. Now, Matt, reading that quote, I mean, when you're going against a rival like Michigan, you talk about those nerves. Was it more emotion coming out in that moment more than anything?
I think so. You know, you got to be able to control those emotions and use them as a weapon. And part of rowing is you've got to be in sync with the other, either three people in your boat or the other seven in your boat. And if you get a little too far up the emotional scale, you have a tendency not to be in rhythm with them, and the timing starts to go away, and all of a sudden the boat doesn't work like a boat. It works like a bunch of individuals. And that's kind of more of what I saw against Michigan this weekend.
You know, and Matt, that's something, my next point here, because, you know, looking at rowing, you know, just tuning into the sport here and there and watching it, it's such a cohesive sport, because when you look at, you know, on the water, everybody's got to be on the same page, same motion. As a coach and, you know, coaching the sport of rowing, how do you keep all of those young women on the same page, in the same tune? That's got to be quite the challenge.
It is a challenge. We've got good coaches and you know, so I think we spend a lot of time, and they spend a lot of time rowing. So it's a matter of the mileage that they can put in, and we kind of have a technique that we use that goes across the board for all the boats. So if we have to switch people in and out, it's not something that's different per boat. So there's a system in place that I think allows that for a little bit. And the athletes themselves buy into it, and they do a good job of making the plan work, and they know that that's their task. And so I think, especially this year, this team is very good at running the plan, and you know, if we say make an adjustment, they do that very well.
How good do you think this team could be, Matt, now in the postseason? What are your expectations right now?
Boy, I hope, right now, if we we want to get back to the NCAAs. We missed it last year for only the second time. And this team really wants to get back. And we're going to have to punch in front of Indiana and Wisconsin are looking strong, as are Michigan and Ohio State. We're probably going to have to be third, maybe fourth in the Big Ten. But looking at the speed that we had this past weekend, I'm hoping we can, if we can really make a good push in the next 8-10 days, we might be able to find ourselves in the top two. So that would be great.
Yes, it would. And, you know, Matt, last week we had on Stacy Slobodnik-Stoll, of course, the head coach of the women's golf team here at Michigan State University. They just captured, a Big Ten title. It did it in one dramatic way. And I got to ask you, just looking at so many different programs that are around here at Michigan State, from the football team that went in a Rose Bowl to, of course, Tom Izzo's men's basketball team, which is good just about every single year, to the soccer team making it to the Elite Eight. I mean, I could go on and on and on when it talks about the athletic success right here in the land of the green and white. When you see that success around it, around a program like yours, and you get to mix and mingle with these different coaches, does that success kind of fuel you and your squad as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's great to be in a winning environment. You know, everybody's standards continue to go up, and that really pushes everyone around you. So, and it's nice because not only the standards go up, but it seems like we as coaches can increase that standard. And you know, we do a lot of in-service, a lot of professional development just in-house. We don't necessarily have to go to conferences. We talk to coaches and do things here, and that's a big benefit.
What is some pieces of advice that other coaches that you've talked to given you, and vice versa?
Well, most of it is just, stick to the plan. Most of it is if you've got a good plan, stay with it. It's don't constantly change things. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of holding standards, and that's really the case. Is can you set up? It's almost. I think Tom Izzo says there's no one bigger than the program, right? Because your program is set up. Everybody comes in to add to the program, and it is not defined. They don't define the program. So
right.
I think that's part of Michigan State. You come in and you basically stand on the shoulders of giants. You've had people before you that are really good, and it's your job to make it better. And so I think as long as you have that attitude, that's what it seems like it goes across the board here, is everybody's looking to improve on a program that's set up.
That is very, very well put, Matt. All right, before I let you go, I want to talk briefly just about the popularity of rowing across the board nationally. Is it growing? Does it seem to be growing, Matt? Can you give our listeners kind of an insight as to that aspect of things?
It really is. Even here in the Lansing area, there is a Lansing Rowing Club, and people, there's a number of members there that keep growing. And I look at it from a high school perspective. The programs are adding, but we also have a sense of athletes are looking. The athletes that we get on campus that come in and say, hey, I want to row, that continues to improve as well. And if you look across the board, there's now, I think there's 87 Division I rowing programs, whereas when I started, I think there were about 45.
Oh, wow.
So there was, and that was most of it, that was added in the late 90s. There was some Title IX things going on there, and that's really was the impetus to drive all these additions. But the parity in rowing is also gone. It used to be that it was Washington Brown in the national finals, and now it could be one of 10, 15, 20 programs that are out there. And so it just continues to improve.
And Matt, how did you actually get involved with the sport back in the day?
I grew up on Gros Isle, which is just south of Detroit, and Ecor's Rowing Club was looking for members. And they came to my high school, and I was a wrestler, and I decided, well, I need a fill-in sport in between, so I started to row.
Nice. That's pretty cool stuff. Well, I definitely would try my hand at it, but you know what, man? I can't swim, so I think I'm out the equation.
I have to put a life jacket on.
There we go. All right. Well, hey, Matt, good luck at the Big Ten Championships. We'll certainly be in touch, and we'll keep our listeners updated on how you guys perform out there. But it was great talking to you. Matt Weiss, head coach of the MSU rowing program. Hey, Matt, thanks a lot.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
No problemo, man. Gotta love that. Yeah, I can't swim, folks. If I got in that boat, it would be all bad, okay? All right, well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit NBA playoffs and also talk about the Detroit Tigers. They are just, man, they are good right now, folks. All right, don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. I want to remind you all, again, Current Sports TV. We tape tomorrow, just like each and every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Tomorrow night, I'll be sitting down with the MSU Deputy Athletic Director, Greg Iani. Greg has been doing some outstanding work when it comes to upgrading the various athletic facilities right here on the campus of Michigan State University. He'll talk about all of that and so much more. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, you can do so by signing up online at WKAR.org. Well, Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky now join me. How you guys doing?
Doing pretty well, man. The Tigers are rolling. It's a great time to be in Detroit for
it
summer.
Is. It definitely is. Man, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. I'm getting ready for the NFL draft. I'm already there.
Yeah. You're already there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Already there mentally, right? It's gonna be a fun time, especially, of course, later on in our show. We're going to give you guys the top five. Each and every Tuesday, we have a top five subject. And today, we're listening to top five things to look for in this year's NFL draft. Before we do that, guys, real briefly, we didn't get to talk about this yesterday. But, of course, the NBA playoffs are now in the second round. What a first round it was. Actually, this morning, it was revealed that Kevin Durant was named the league's most valuable player. You guys heard my thoughts on it to start the show. Do you guys think, were you guys surprised by it, and do you think he should have won? Alex?
I don't know. Well, the thing about the LeBron versus KD thing is that LeBron's kind of owned it for a couple of years now. He's been that guy. I feel that maybe the league, maybe some of the fans may have wanted a change. I think that the change in terms of KD getting the award might have been a good thing.
Do you think he deserved it, though?
Yeah, that's a tough call. Look, we're not in the NBA. We're not covering it day by day. I don't know. I can't even make that argument.
Well, I watch it daily. It's like my Bible. I think he deserved it without a doubt. He was more consistent. He was the most consistent player in the league as far as dominance goes and in various aspects.
But see, that's the thing, and that's why the whole MVP discussion is it the most valuable to a team? Is it the best player physically and skill-wise, or is it
I think it's a combination of all of it.
That's why I don't even want to touch it.
When I think about the most valuable player, I think about if you were to take that guy from that team, would that team crumble? And I think if you took Kevin Durant, especially seeing as though they didn't have Russell Westbrook for most of this season, if you would have took KD from that team, I mean, that team would have totally fell apart, I think. And KD, I mean, just look at his numbers. I mean, we hadn't seen numbers like this, I mean, since the days of Michael Jordan and Magic and Bird. I mean, he was redonkulous most of the season. LeBron started to really make headway during the later part of the year. Don't get me wrong, LeBron James is great. I still think he's probably the best player on the planet. But as far as overall consistent dominance, KD was bar none, I think, the best.
Man. Yeah, I think far and away he's the MVP, and it seems like the voters did,
too. Oh, yeah, the voters. I mean, look at the votes.
And either way you look at it, whether it's the most valuable player on a certain team or just the best player, you can make a heck of an argument for Kevin Durant. So
oh, yeah.
I think it's a no-brainer that he won. I mean, he had a 25-game point streak for, what, half the season?
Right.
I mean, just the way that he brought it every single night was incredible. The month and a half without Westbrook where he basically carried the team, scored 30 a night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was unstoppable all season.
He was.
Last series against the Grizzlies, didn't look quite like himself. He had, you know, Oklahoma City newspapers calling him Mr. Unreliable.
I know.
Which is
they would apologize. Did
so
you see that?
Dumb.
Yeah, it was
well,
so
yeah,
stupid,
they should apologize because it shouldn't have been written in the first place.
Right,
but,
yeah.
You know, just because he's playing against Tony Allen, who is one of
right.
the best perimeter defenders in the league
right.
and has been for years, he struggled. And I think even though they lost last night, I mean, Chris Paul goes crazy from three-point range, I still think he's going to have a moment in the playoffs, and it hasn't happened yet. I think it's going to happen this series. I still have Oklahoma City winning the series.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as far as the MVP goes, as far as the regular season goes, he was far and away the best player in the league. LeBron,
yeah,
I think he realizes that the regular season isn't the end-all be-all. He knows that his time is in the playoffs. He knows that his legacy will be, you know, made or broken in the playoffs. If the Heat win the title this year, he doesn't care about the MVP.
No, not at
one
all.
Bit.
Yeah, I think both of their mindsets are totally on a stratosphere of just winning now, especially Kevin Durant's, because he's kind of taken the back seat to LeBron for so many years now, and he's come out and been very adamant in saying, yo, I'm trying to be the best now. I want to win a ring. That's his goal. He doesn't care about, even with the whole streak you brought up with the 25 consecutive, you know, game after game after game. I mean,
right.
somebody asked him about it in the locker room. He's like, yo, I don't care about it yet. I honestly wish it was over with so we can stop talking about it. I just want to go out there and win. So his mentality has totally changed. But, yes, I definitely agree with you, Matt, on that. And like I said, you know, it's pretty – anytime your name is mentioned and your stats are compared to the greats of the game, like an MJ – Kevin Durant, again, he averaged more points and rebounds per game than Michael Jordan did in his seventh year in the NBA. 32 points per game, 7.4 rebounds per game, 5.5 assists, shooting 56%. That's unbelievable to me. I mean, so yeah, and James agreed, saying, quote, much respect to him. He deserves it. He had a big-time MVP season. So LeBron recognized it as well. All right, guys. Well, the first round was certainly entertaining, to say the least. Again, I said yesterday when we signed off, man, did I feel for the city of Toronto watching that that BK and Raptor series. Man, they were so close, yet so far, I mean, it was I forget who drove. It was a bad drive, and they had a chance to win. It was a bad inbounds pass to Paul Pierce. It goes out of bounds. Raptors have a chance to win the game. Totally just, you saw Drake on it. Drake is like the ambassador now for the Toronto Raptors. He's going crazy on the sidelines. It was just heartbreak for him. And now, of course, Brooklyn now is playing the Miami Heat, which I think by no means will that be an easy series. I think a lot of people are sleeping on Brooklyn in that series. I think that can go six, maybe seven games. It's going to surprise a lot of people in that series, I think. But it was a great first round. How about the Blazers? You mentioned yesterday the Blazers with that crazy, who was it, Damian Lillard. That 0.9 seconds on the clock. Unbelievable first round. It was one of the best first rounds I've ever seen.
Absolutely. I mean, what do we have, five game sevens? I mean, there were Oklahoma City and Memphis went to four straight overtime games. I mean, it was just a bunch of evenly matched teams across the board. And I think the Eastern Conference actually kind of exceeded their billing, because I think everybody knew the West was going to be great and knew that the action in the West was going to be awesome to watch. I don't think anybody thought that, you know, Washington would kind of run Chicago off the court.
That was a big surprise.
That was the most underwhelming series, too, just in terms of entertainment value, just because it wasn't that close. But, I mean, you look at Toronto-Brooklyn, great series. Mm-hmm. Atlanta pushing Indiana, and even though that might be a product of Indiana not being that good, it was still fun to watch. Atlanta made it interesting.
Right.
And then, you know, you have Miami kind of rolling through the Bobcats. Al Jefferson getting hurt.
That was big.
That was the worst moment of the playoffs so far, I would say. But the Western Conference was just every game. I mean, San Antonio and Oklahoma City getting pushed to seven games. I mean, you have Houston and Portland playing back and forth games. I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge starting out on fire, Damian Lillard kind of finishing the job, and then of course the most talked about series in the playoffs, that Golden State Clippers series.
Right.
Off the court issues aside, still a compelling series. Between the lines.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, no, very similar things to me. I'm really looking forward to see if the Clippers go on in the playoffs and make it another round, what the storylines will be like with all the adversity they've overcame with the off-the-court issues, what is said in that locker room to keep them going on the court every day, and what that morale is like. I just think that's a terrific storyline in the NBA playoffs. And if they make it and they go really far, look at the different trends and the different trade-offs between the Clippers versus the Lakers. I mean, Clippers are now making a mainstay as the team in basketball for L.A.
Yeah.
So that, for me, is a huge storyline with the flip-floppy Lakers, the Clippers slowly taking reins as the top dog in L.A. I think that's a great storyline, guys.
Yeah, it's without a doubt the biggest storyline when you talk about the NBA playoffs, because, I mean, Donald Sterling dominated our airwaves all last week. He's still dominating airwaves to this day. I mean, I think his girlfriend actually was quote-unquote girlfriend, V. Stiviano. She had a sit-down interview with Barbara Walters over the weekend. I mean, this story is definitely has a lot of headway, and it's put a lot of spotlight on the Los Angeles Clippers in general. They've done one outstanding job. You got to give credit to the players and Doc Rivers for the way they've handled this. And, you know, when you talk about that Golden State series, though, I mean, in that Game 7, eventually, we talked about it. Golden State has no inside presence at all. And DeAndre Jordan was able to go off. Blake Griffin was able to take advantage of him down the stretch. I mean, that series was a great series, but, you know, the weaknesses for Golden State reared its ugly head in that Game 7, and now you have the Clippers moving on. And now, you know, I have OKC going all the way. When we did our NBA preview, I think they're going to go all the way and win a championship, but, man, did my pick look kind of a little iffy yesterday. And I think right now when you talk about the Thunder, I've always looked at this team and said, man, can Westbrook and Durant win a ring together? And that's the biggest question I have for them, because it seems as though Westbrook wants to take too many shots here and there. Kevin Durant is obviously the leader on the team, so should he be taking those shots? It's kind of a quarrel that I've always battled with the Thunder, if they can win together, which we'll see. We'll see, but you can't mess around playing a team like the Clippers, who have a lot of weapons.
Yeah, and the Pacers have the same problem as we were talking about earlier on in the year with who's going to take the role, and a bunch of guys just taking shots. But, yeah, That's the thing is, when it comes to the Thunder, now he has the MVP cloud over him. So maybe he's going to really take more control than Westbrook now. I mean, what effect will that have?
Well, I think Westbrook is just going to take his shots regardless. I think Westbrook is a guy, when you see him out there, and he's been criticized for it, Westbrook just doesn't care what people say. He's going to go out there and take the shots that he feels he can make. And it's like every time down the court, that's what he feels. And sometimes that you look at the shots he takes, and it's like, okay, you could have gone to Durant on that possession. But on the other end, if Westbrook makes it, it's like, okay, well, he made it. But still, you know, it's just this constant battle. And when you bring up the Pacers, I just think the Pacers are totally just clocked out right now. I mean, Roy Hibbert, where is he? I like Mahimi when he comes in, but still, he's iffy sometimes. Paul George, the backcourt is inconsistent. The Pacers are, I don't know. I think Washington is going to surprise a lot of people. They're going to move on and play Miami, I think, and Washington in Miami. I don't know how that series will turn out, but how about Bradley Beal and John Wall? They've been really big surprises. Indiana right now, I don't think Indiana's getting past Washington. A lot of it has to do with mentally right now. I think mentally Indiana's kind of checked out, if you ask me.
100% agree. The only guy who's engaged is David West.
Right, exactly.
He's the only guy who's still looks like he's playing for something. Everybody else looks like they want to go, you know, stare out a rainy window and think about their life. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
How, yeah. Like, the entire team just has this, you know, cloud of depression hanging over their head. It's insane. I've never seen anything like it. Mm. I think Washington's going to beat him as well. And Wall and Beal are great, but they have quality players all throughout that roster.
Oh, yeah, Gortat, Nene.
And their bigs are experienced guys who've been there before and kind of know how the playoffs go. So right. I think as good as they're going to be, it definitely depends on the young guards, but they have the veteran presence in the front court to kind of balance it out. That's why I think they're so intriguing. I think they could push Miami. I don't think they'll beat Miami,
right.
But I think they'll maybe give them a scare.
Right.
As far as the West goes, I have to agree with you with OKC eventually winning the series. I think the biggest thing, as far as Westbrook is concerned, I would rather have Westbrook shooting a few too many shots than being disengaged and going to the end of the bench and sitting by himself when the team's in the huddle like
he
did last
night. So do
you
feel like that's the only way you can engage him is by just letting him do his thing? Like
kind of.
A dog without a leash?
I mean, even though he does things that make you scratch your head and you know, it's like, oh, Russ, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, he's still one of the 12 best players in the league. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still an elite player. He can do basically whatever he wants out on the court. I mean, Chris Paul is a great defender at the point guard spot. He mm-hmm. can't handle Russell Westbrook.
No.
Nobody can. Yeah, there's nobody in the league that can really tame him if he's engaged and going 100%. I think that the biggest question is, can Scottie Brooks get them on the same page and get them both going at the same time? Because that's the only way the Thunder are going to win. And again, that's the biggest question.
Yeah, I just don't know if they can get going the same time. That's the question for me. But in the end, I think OKC will figure it out somehow, some way. I'm still sticking with them to win the whole thing. I can't remember. What would you guys choose to win the whole thing? I don't think we... Did we get to that?
I think we chose
first round matchups in the NBA preview. Who'd you have? Who'd you guys have winning the whole thing?
Oh gosh, I don't know.
I knew Matt was gonna say. I had a feeling.
I don't know.
Alex, you had to choose. Who would you go?
Are we choosing
with?
Right now?
Yeah,
live on the air.
Let's go. I'm going Thunder. I'm going to Thunder.
I'm gonna take the Thunder too.
I guess I would have Thunder? To. If I had to pick, I would choose Miami.
You're going with Miami again.
Until they lose, it's hard to doubt them.
It is.
They still have the guys. They still have LeBron. They still have Wade. They still have Bosh.
They do. It's going to be interesting down the stretch, guys. All right, really quickly, guys. The Detroit Tigers, man, how about the Tigers? They are in a complete zone right now. The pitching is their starting pitching is so just intact right now. Hitting. I mean, the other day against the Royals, they had 16 hits to account for the sweep. I mean, it's really remarkable how this team is playing right now, clicking on all cylinders. Now, again, it's still early. Very, very early. We talk about a baseball season here. But right now, the Tigers have been so impressive game by game by game. It's been really encouraging to see guys just step up to the plate and really make contact with the ball. You know, I had question marks with Torii Hunter. Torii Hunter looks great right now. I mean, it's hard to pick a guy who's not playing well right now other than the bullpen. But right now, the Tigers are rolling.
Yeah. And one thing for me that's the key storyline is the coaching of Brad Ausmus. Because if you look at past years, when it comes to base running and the amount of stolen bases, bottom of the league, 30th, 26th, 29th. This year, tied for 6th in stolen bases total so far. That's a big statistic for me. They're way more aggressive on the base paths. I remember watching a game last week where Kinsler stole 2nd and then immediately on the next pitch tried to steal 3rd again. Just a lot more aggression. And although Jim Leland was a very aggressive manager, Brent Ausmus is way more aggressive on the base pass than Leland. Leland was more of a timing guy, I'd say. He's more pinpointing that the aggressive timing of when to steal. But for me, that's been the biggest pro for the Tigers is the base running. And aside from that, they're making a lot more contact. They're not necessarily swinging for power because when they had Prince Fielder and Miguel Cabrera together, right. You knew those guys were going power. But now with Kinsler there, with Austin Jackson batting lower in the lineup, you have Victor back now. There's a lot more contact with the ball, which I've noticed. So I don't know if you guys agree with that, but those are two big factors.
No, I see that. Yeah, man.
I agree with that. And, you know, honestly, that gets me most excited for the playoffs because that's what wins you games in the postseason. When you can manufacture runs, you're not relying on a 500-foot home run from Miguel Cabrera. And I think that's huge. The other big thing, the other huge plus, is that we haven't had that stretch where Cabrera is absolutely unstoppable, undeniably the best player in the game. You know, that week-long stretch where he hits 7 home runs in 8 games. Mm-hmm. That hasn't happened yet, and they're still just cruising along. So I think, if anything, that's encouraging because I think he's proven over the course of his career that that's going to happen. He's right. going to have a 2-week to a month period where he's just unstoppable.
It's coming.
It's coming. Sooner or later it will happen.
Right.
When it does is anybody's guess, but the fact that they're doing this without him, the fact that they're getting contributions from, you know, new acquisitions like Rajay Davis or Andrew Romine had a sacrifice bunt yesterday. That was right. huge. I mean, they're just making things happen with guys on the margins. It's not just the stars that are doing it all. It's the entire team. So I think it bodes well going forward.
Yeah,
I agree. The one scare I have, and I don't know if you two agree, is the injury bug. Now, I'm not talking when it comes to if someone like Victor Martinez gets hurt as a DH, but I'm talking if Romine, for whatever reason, gets hurt, or someone in that infield gets hurt, a very big, crucial player to the team. Outfield, you can plug in the gaps. I mean, yeah, they acquired Roger Davis. I know that was a big puzzle piece for them in the offseason was filling in that next outfield spot. But when it comes to the infield, when it comes to an all-star second baseman, you don't have Infante anymore. You really don't have a lot of guys behind him. That's a big factor, guys, is the injury bug. And I would hate to see an Iglesias case happen all over again for this team.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think injuries, you know, looking at last season, the grind of a baseball season is so long. You never know what can happen, especially with the Tigers. When they're healthy, I mean, they're great. But, you know, when those little injuries, we saw Cabrera laboring. He was still great last season. But, you know, if they stay healthy, they will be a force. But that's always in the back of your head. You talk about guys. I mean, it's so crazy because, you know, Cabrera, when we were talking a few weeks ago about his slump, if you will, you know, batting with 206 when he dropped to 206 on his batting average. Cabrera is hitting 386 right now since dropping to that 206. That's unbelievable right now. Still does not, like you said, man, he still doesn't have that home run streak going. That's going to come. It's going to come, I think, and he's going to be a huge factor in that regard. Again, Torii Hunter, I have to mention him. He had 3 singles and 3 RBIs in his current 12-game hitting streak right now. He's hitting 408. That's unbelievable. I mean, guys are stepping up just the whole team, this whole cohesive team right now is rolling on all cylinders. Now, again, it's going to be interesting to see how they combat that because they can't stay, let's be honest, they can't stay this hot as the season goes on. Once these numbers start to dwindle and guys start to get back to normalcy, how they combat that and if they can still rack up wins, that'll be also be a telling test of this team. But right now, you got to be encouraged if you're a Detroit Tigers fan, without a doubt. So, all right, guys, let's hit a second break. When we come back, we'll talk about the NFL draft. The NFL draft is 2 days away. You don't want to miss that. Or the top 5 things to look for in this year's NFL draft. Stick around. Current Sports comes back in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, let's talk about the NFL draft for a sec. It's right around the corner. Finally, it is here, folks. Exciting stuff. I'm sure many will be glued to their TVs to, you know, keep their eyes on how, you know, their favorite teams' rosters will look in the upcoming year. And, you know, each and every Tuesday we have Top 5 Tuesday here. Today, of course, the top 5 things to look for in the NFL draft. I'm interested to see how your guys' list looks. I'm going to reserve mine for last. Matt, you want to start this thing off for us?
Sure. I guess these are in no particular order. Just 5 things I'm excited to see in the NFL draft. Number 1, Michael Sam, I want to see how it's covered because this was a big story when he came out. He's the first player to go through the NFL draft process as an openly gay prospect. I'm interested to see how much attention he garners, whether ESPN is, you know, constantly panning to, you know, his house. I'm guessing that's where he'll be just watching with his family or something. Mm. Because, you know, whenever they get close on that, you know, Mel Kiper's best available,
right,
they're always checking in with players who might be drafted here, mm, and then they maybe fall a little bit more, and then they take even more looks at them. So I think it's going to be interesting to see, A, where he gets drafted, and B, how ESPN handles that process.
Yeah,
are they
process.
Continuing to just, like, you know, beat us over the head with coverage of Michael Sam watching the draft like we are?
Right.
Or will they just kind of move on and talk about him as the player or other players who are getting drafted? I'm interested to see how that all goes down.
Yeah, and if you're an NFL team, too, looking at this whole Michael Sam situation, I mean, that's going to garner a lot of attention for your ball club. If you want that kind of attention in your locker room, how you deal with that attention, that's a whole nother, you know, box of worms to deal with.
Oh, yeah. So, he's going to have an interesting rookie year for sure.
He is, without
a
doubt. Yeah.
Next up, quarterbacks, where they fall and when. I'm interested to see who goes first, whether it's, you know, Blake Bortles, Johnny Manziel, Teddy Bridgewater.
Right.
And honestly, just going forward, who is the best pro? Personally, I think I like Bridgewater the best. I do enjoy watching Manziel the most, but I think Bridgewater is cool enough under pressure that he'll succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Third, Darqueze Dennard and the other Michigan State players getting drafted. Dennard specifically just because he's a first-round, you know, grade in all the mock drafts. Interesting to see he's got potential to go to the Lions at 10.
Yeah.
Could drop down to, like, 22, just in that middle of the first-round range. Interested to see where he goes. Number two, or I guess four, where the Lions go with the number 10 pick.
Right.
Do they take a tackle? Do they take a corner? Do they take a safety? Do they trade the pick? Do they draft another defensive lineman? Do they take Sammy Watkins? You know, there's a million different ways they could go. It's going to be interesting to see how the dominoes fall. And then last but not least, it's got to be the top pick.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to see what Houston does with it. If they even, you know, if they take Clowney, if they trade to Atlanta. I mean, there's a lot of rumors running, flying around like there always is in the days leading up to the draft. I'm interested to see who goes off the board first.
Nice. It's a pretty good list. Yep. Yeah, I'm definitely interested to see. I think the Lions, they're going to go defense, I think. And to see who they get, though, I think that's going to be the most interesting.
It's going to be interesting.
It's going to be interesting. Right. Alex.
Yep, I'll go real quickly. Number five, Roger Goodell, and the draft announcements are just great.
Mm.
Seeing all the guests and the players and the boos from all of the fans are great. The priceless boos. The first time he gets up there, it's great. You hear the Jets fans yelling at the top of their lungs, and you hear some of the quiet, you know, the quiet Packer fans with their Super Bowl rings on top just hanging out. So that's nice.
I like that, too. I like watching it, too.
Number four, the Chris Berman draft coverage is great. You know, 34th year, he's just a staple. Just watching him every year is great. It's so entertaining. Number three, the NFL green room reactions. I love those. Sometimes with family, the interviews they have are great. Watching it, and like Matt said, are they going to be pounding in on Michael Sam? Are they going to be pounding in on Johnny Manziel? Because that's my number two is, where will the Johnny football show go?
Yeah, it's me
and
too.
I know when it gets to the green room, they're just going to be pounding cameras at Johnny left and right. And
yeah, they are.
I'm going to be very excited to see that and his reaction and what team he goes to. And then, like Matt said, where Spartans will go, will Danico Allen get drafted to a team? How far down will Bullock go? It's amazing. So
it is. It's gonna. Yeah. As far as the Spartans go, I mean, there's so many Michigan. Of course, the best defense in the entire nation. To see where they drop and fall is going to be very, very fun to watch and keep a close eye to. But, yeah, I kind of got the same, you know, for me, you know, which team has the courage to select a Johnny Football or Michael Sam? Because wherever those two go, there are going to be cameras everywhere. And, you know, depending on who you are, who's the GM of your team, who's the head coach of your team, that attention, a lot of coaches don't like that attention sometimes. You know what I mean? And you know, even though it'll be great to fans, it'll definitely bring fans to the seats. But that attention could really divert what you're trying to do on the field. And where he goes and which team has the courage to select those two is going to be fun to watch. They're both great players, I think, and I think both want to have a lot of success in the next level. Michael Sam, of course, the reigning SEC Defensive Player of the Year. Johnny Football, he had a great combine. He's done extraordinary things in college. A Heisman Trophy winner. They deserve to be drafted. But which teams have the courage to do so is going to be very interesting to see. Again, Matt, like you, how many quarterbacks will be drafted in the first round? That was another one I'll be looking at. Another one, the number one overall pick, the five best players in the draft. Those top five picks for me are going to be very interesting because there's so many. Of course, Sammy Watkins, you know, Greg Robinson, you know, Mike Evans. I mean, there's so many out there that you can choose to. The pick of the litter here in this year's draft is so deep. I think more compelling than arguably the last 3 to 4 to 5 years, I think. I mean, there's so many out there in the draft that could be top picks. You know, how many receivers go in the first round? We've seen, you know, a lot of teams that, you know, are willing to take the risk out there and choose a receiver. Hasn't always panned out to be the greatest choice. So how many?
Wait, what?
I agree.
Wait, it's not great to pick a wide receiver?
Well,
no, I'm just kidding. As a Lions fan,
sorry,
trust me,
yes,
I know a lot about that. Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah, we've definitely been down that road. If the Lions do that, I will just throw my TV
even
out
though,
the window.
Even though Sammy Watkins and Mike Evans look like terrific players.
They look great.
It's just
we've been down this road. We don't need another receiver on this team anymore. You know, we've beat this horse to death. Let's focus on defense now. And you know, it's just going to be interesting, guys. And also, who's the third best defensive player in the class? Assuming Clowney and Mack are the top two, for me, it comes down for I think, you know, Justin Gilbert. His name has been mentioned a few times, so I think either one is in the mix for it. I think Gilbert will go to the Vikings. I think, and that's been the rumor for the past few days now. It's going to be interesting, too, because I think Clowney and Mack are a given right now, the top two defensive players. Who that third guy is going to be fun to watch and see. So it's going to be fun, though. You guys have, like, draft parties you guys go? You have, like, rituals or anything? Because after the first round, for me, I'm like, all right, I'll clock out.
Ever since they moved the first round to Thursday.
Yeah.
It's just kind of weird.
It is.
I get that it's for prime time, but I enjoyed the days where it was just like, well, this is my weekend. This is my Saturday and my Sunday. I'm just going to watch the NFL draft for like 9 hours. I enjoy that. It was more condensed. I knew that was my day. This is kind of like, oh, did you check in? You know, no, I have other things to watch. I'm out doing things.
Yeah,
you
it's
know.
Thursday. It's
exactly.
The week is still going.
Exactly. So I think it's a little odd the way they format it now. No party for me.
No,
I'll check
all.
In.
I usually pass the first round, man. I just kind of just look at my phone and see where guys go after that, man.
Right.
Because I, you know,
you're going to find out the information anyway.
Yeah, you're going to find it out anyway. You know, it's not like, you know, unless something crazy happens, he goes on stage and busts out a dance or something like that. I mean, that's other
but
than
then
that.
That'll be up on the internet in 2 seconds.
Exactly.
You know,
so
it's everything you can just catch up on within seconds.
Right.
I'm just thankful that the first round isn't 15 minutes per pick anymore.
Right.
Because that was
that's ridiculous.
Horrific.
Yeah, I totally agree with you guys. All right, well, a minute left. Again, remind you all, Current Sports TV tapes tomorrow. Greg Iani, he's the MSU athletic director, deputy athletic director. He's a great, great guy. He'll be talking about all of the new additions that are coming to multiple athletic venues around the campus of Michigan State University. Cool LED lights. We had Chris Solari to talk about that on the show yesterday, but LED lights will now be in the Breslin Center. New ice at Munn Ice Arena. Of course, the North End Zone project down at Spartan Stadium. You're going to talk about it all and kind of break it down and talk about the money allocation. Some really interesting tidbits here and there. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, again, you can sign up online for free at WKAR.org. You don't want to miss that. As always, folks, thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. I want to thank Matt Weiss, who is the head coach of the MSU women's rowing team as they now prepare for the Big Ten Championships. That's got to be exciting stuff. Thanks a lot, Matt, for joining me today. As always, take care. Have one fantastic day. It's gorgeous out there on this Tuesday, folks. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing. As always, take care and be easy, people.